So, welcome to today's edition of Cover to Cover with me, Paula Wiseman. So today I'm joined in the studio by Joe Joyce, whose fantastic book Echoland was chosen for this year's Dublin One City, One Book campaign. So hi Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much indeed, Paula. Great to be back.
Cool. So this is your second visit, obviously, to us here on Cover to Cover. Last time we chatted about your novel Echo Beat.
Indeed.
Yeah. So do you want to, obviously we're talking about Echoland this time. Do you want to maybe start off by telling us a little bit about the story in Echoland, what it's all about?
Yeah, well, actually, Echoland is the first of the series.
Book, yeah.
Echo Beat was the second, which we spoke about a couple of years ago when it came out. Yeah, Echoland is basically set in Dublin, neutral Ireland, during the Second World War, or the emergency as we know it. And the main character is a young army officer called Paul Duggan, who has been suddenly moved from an infantry battalion in the west of Ireland to army headquarters and into a unit called G2, which is military intelligence, whose main job during the war was dealing with primarily German spies, but all sorts of spies. And he's been moved there basically at the behest of his uncle, who's a Fianna Fáil backbench TD, who wants to have somebody on the inside so he knows what's going on. And Duggan suspects this, but and is not very happy about it because he knows his uncle is a serious and serial manipulator.
That's what we like to read about, isn't it? Bit of espionage, bit of manipulation.
Yes,
in a book.
Yes, and a change from a serial killer.
Yeah.
Just a serial manipulator.
So, as we said, Echoland is the first book of the Echoland series. So how did it all start? How did everything kind of come about initially? How did the series come about initially? Well, not the first book.
It came about in a very sort of sideways kind of way. I suppose I always had an interest in that period, particularly as a journalist. And going back very many years, so I had read a lot about it. Intriguingly enough, I mean, the person who really got me interested in it was a Russian spy who... I mean, he wasn't officially a Russian spy, but he worked for the Soviet...
He's a bad spy, if he's telling you he's a Russian spy.
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, all us journalists assumed he was a spy. He worked for the Russian news agency TASS, so the Soviet Union, then in the early 80s. And there was a dull debate on at the time when Charlie Hawley was Taoiseach. And there was a debate about neutrality, and there were mutterings and rumblings that there was something going on about neutrality, but we didn't really know at the time what it was. And there was a dull debate about it, and all us Irish journos decided that there was nothing new in this. But I happened to be walking out of Leinster House after the debate with this Russian guy, who was an extremely suave individual,
yeah.
Unbelievably suave individual. And we were chatting about it, and I said, I didn't think there was anything much in that. And he said, no, there was. It was very interesting. It was, and he started quoting Eamon de Valera said about neutrality in 1939, in 1943.
Oh, wow.
What Sean Lamass said about it in 1961, when we were trying to join the then common market.
Yeah.
What Jack Lynch had said about it later in the 1970s, when we were joining the EU, as it then wasn't. So I thought, I better learn something about this. And he seemed to know an awful lot more about it than I did.
Yeah, too good an opportunity to pass on.
So as a long roundabout way of telling you, that's where I became interested in that whole period and read a lot about it over the years. And it's a fascinating period.
Is there a lot of research involved? Obviously, when you're talking about a piece set in a particular period, there must be some sort of research or a lot of research. You want to get your facts straight.
Well, there is, yeah. I suppose a lot of the sort of background politics, which is the main background to the book of what is going on with neutrality and so on, and the pressures from Britain and America and Germany about which side are you on and all the rest of it, and trying to remain neutral in the middle of all that. I mean, I knew a lot about that for the reasons I told you journalistically. I wrote quite a bit about it back in the day. But when you're researching a book like this, the main focus of the research, in a way, isn't about the sort of macro politics or diplomacy and so on, because I knew all that to an extent. But it's about the little details of life in Dublin at the time.
And
the way people behaved and so on. And that's the kind of detail you're really looking for in your research. Just it's just reading newspapers and picking up from the ads as much as from the news stories. And of course, newspapers were very heavily censored at the time.
Yeah.
And initially, I mean, the book is set, Echoland, they're all set in very specific periods. Echoland, particularly in May, June 1940, as France is collapsing, and it looks like Germany has actually already won the war, and it's all over, bar the shouting, really.
Well.
initially, when I started doing it, I thought, I'll just look up, you know, what the weather was like in such a day and so on as France collapsed. But there were no weather reports in the newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose
no
there
forecasts,
must,
no
there
reports.
Must still be papers around from those days, you know, archived.
Oh, there
archived
are, yeah.
Away.
There are lots of archives, yeah. Yeah, there are lots of archives in the National Archives, government archives, and military intelligence archives, indeed, about the spies, which you can go and look at in the military archives.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like I was talking to someone earlier about the whole 1916 thing, and people have become a lot more interested. Irish history, everyone's kind of thinking back to, you know, these major periods in Irish history. And, like, you know, Echoland, again, is a very kind of period piece that people can kind of identify with.
I think so, yeah. And I think it's partly that it's... Well, for people of my age, it's sort of our parents' generation to an extent, or for younger people, it's their grandparents' generation. And what has intrigued me during the One City, One Book month, the events during April, where I did a lot of readings and talks in libraries, was the number of stories people had about... some about their own vague memories of the period, and some indeed about their strong memories of the period, but also about their parents' memories and so on. And it was an intriguing period and very nuanced in a way. I think maybe that's one of the things we've learned from the 1916 celebrations, that history is always much more nuanced than the simple story that you might have picked up in school or whatever.
And that sounds like there's another book there for you, Joe, with all this.
Maybe.
Hope you were sitting there with a little notebook and go, this is great. Oh, this would be great for a, you know.
Yeah, well,
next book.
Lots of little stories, details about people's lives. I mean, there was one woman at one of the library events. Remember her mother later in the 1940s. I mean, rationing went on for years after the war. Her mother had been obsessed with where were the ration books and keeping them safe. And in the house, they had a plaster statue of St. Anthony. And part of the statue was he was standing for some reason, I don't even know why, but he was standing on plaster books. And
right.
She thought they were St. Anthony's ration books.
Oh, it's great. It must be good, you know, stories like that are great.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're the kind of things in a way that you're looking for when you're trying to put yourself back into that period, which of course was also a very very dangerous period, very nervous period, and you know, it came home to people very violently, the North Strand bombing in Dublin, which killed about 29 people. But, I mean, a couple of weeks earlier, bombing, very deliberate bombing. It's not too clear why the North Strand bombing happened.
Yeah.
But there was a very deliberate bombing of Belfast a couple of weeks earlier, which killed 700 people in one night. We tend to forget about that, you know.
Yeah.
So the possibility of finding oneself, the country, involved in the war was pretty... terrifying. Really.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, so Echoland, was that your first book, your first crack at a novel, or had you written
no,
a few bits before?
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was my first novels were written about 20 years ago, or 25 years ago. First one's called Off the Record, and another called The Trigger Man. But they're now so old that I can class them as historical fiction as well. So I can maintain that I'm a historical fiction writer only, although they weren't historical at the time they were written.
Yeah, so I suppose you were a practice writer then, obviously, when you started on the Echoland series. So, I mean, how long did the first book take from kind of that original idea for a book till you kind of had a finished story?
I suppose it probably took a year and a half to 2 years, but some of the plot lines in it had been rattling around in my head for some time before that, and it was the decision to set it in that period, I suppose, from that time on. It took about 18 months, I think, to actually write it.
I suppose it's about, you get that idea and then it's a case of kind of fleshing it out.
Yeah, I mean, you have an idea for a story, and then it's when to set it, because there's one strain, one plot line in the story that goes back to the War of Independence, and this was an idea I'd had for a story for some time, but because that's now so long ago, I mean, we're almost 100 years ago, it wouldn't have worked in a more modern setting.
Yeah.
So the idea suddenly struck me of writing about the emergency period, the 1940s, and all the other things that threw up then, you know, I think made the story more interesting.
Yeah. So for anyone that hasn't read the books, so is there there's a thread that goes through three books?
There's a thread that goes through the three books in the sense that the central character, this young army lieutenant in military intelligence, is the central character in all three. And they are searching for, initially he is, because he's the young lad in the office, and he is given the job of trying to check out a suspect German who lives in Marion Square, where they think he might be a spy, but he doesn't seem to actually do anything, you know, except he writes letters to some an address on the continent, and he gets checks back, and but he doesn't seem to do anything. So he's not the high priority spy that they're actually chasing at the time. So Duggan starts off in pursuit of him, along with a special branch detective about his own age, with whom he gets quite friendly, even though they are both told by their superiors not to tell each other what's going on, because the relationship between Army Intelligence and the Garda Special Branch was never good.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want, isn't it? A really good central character that you can, you know, people can identify with. And they're kind of like,
hopefully,
you know, they're following him along on his journey.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, also, I mean, he's, you know, it has been pointed out to me that he's a pretty unusual character for as a central character in a spy novel, who is usually a world-weary old hack like myself or something. You know? But the advantage of having a young person who is both new to this particular job, he's also new to Dublin.
Yeah,
he doesn't know the city at all.
Yeah,
in a sense, he is our eyes and ears into the whole period, into the city life at the time, and so on.
Yeah, so I mean, what's your process for putting your characters together? Do you find your characters, like Duggan, for example, did he come to you fully formed, or did you have a little spark of an idea, and then you kind of thought, well, maybe he'd have this attribute, or he'd have this kind of characteristic? How do you put your characters together?
In a very crab-like way. I mean, after my first thriller was published back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, my then editor at the time, who was in a London publishing house, told me I was doing this wrong, totally wrong, the wrong way around. Basically, one should aim when writing thrillers to write one a year and spend 9 months plotting it out and three months writing it. But I can't actually plot in advance. I just cannot make up detailed plots in advance. So I tend to start with a situation and then see, in one sense, try and plot my way out of it then.
So you never know an end of a book.
No.
You just start and you're kind of like the reader.
Yeah.
You're kind of, it just goes as you go along.
Yeah, sort of set up a situation and then see what happens, you know. And it's not a method I necessarily recommend to anybody, because I think it's a very painful way of doing it, because you really don't know what's happening in the next chapter.
Yeah. Oh, but people, different authors write differently, don't they? If you were writing same as, you know, I don't know, Joe Bloggs, it'd kind of take the interest away from it, I suppose, for yourself.
Yeah.
As an author.
Well, I think it's more interesting in one way, although more difficult to do it this way, because I think books that are plotted out in advance, particularly in the thriller genre,
yeah,
really all the whole, you can almost identify them because the whole thrust of the story is the story and not, you know, all the little incidental bits along the way,
yeah,
and not the character development and so on. It's just about, you know, what happens, what has happened,
yeah,
what
yeah.
has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this amazing One City, One Book, I mean, it's huge. It's a huge, huge thing for the city. I mean, how did it come about? How did Echoland get chosen for this amazing, amazing thing?
I don't really know. I mean, it came totally out of the blue. As far as I was concerned, I mean, I didn't know it was being considered or anything like that. As far as I know, the City Library has a committee which kicks around ideas for for what to choose and so on. And part of it is very much, I think, they build a program around the book. So in a sense, it has to be a book that you can actually build a program around relatively easily. And so, I mean, this in one sense was ready-made for the One City, One Book, in the sense that they developed a program of some 40 events all around the emergency period, with talks on all sorts of things, music, films, lectures, and so on.
So, I mean, how much involvement did you have in, or was it basically you're the author of the book and that's kind of your key role in the whole One City, One Book thing?
Yes, it is. I mean, the program was put together by people in the City Library who did a great job on getting all sorts of interesting speakers. And I was involved mainly in doing readings and talks in libraries around the city and county.
Yeah, that's the thing. That must be great. You know, you're going in and you're talking about this, you know, your baby.
Look at my baby.
Yeah, look at my new baby.
Look at my,
well, not my
old
new
baby.
My old baby.
indeed. No, well, it was. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a great experience and fascinating. And there was a great reaction at all the talks I was at and so on. And because of the period and because people were so so interested and so intrigued by it. I mean, they were telling me more stories about it than I was probably telling them. You
know? Yeah, good for the old CV as well, I suppose, if you're putting your CV together. Yeah, I had, One City, One Book. What was that? That was mine.
Yeah.
2017, that was mine.
That was my 15 minutes of fame, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, Joe, have you always written? Has writing always been a natural thing for you? I mean, when you were a kid, did you love writing essays? Were you kind of...
No, I didn't like writing essays particularly, but I always wanted to be a writer. And in retrospect, possibly foolishly, went into journalism partly for that reason. But I don't actually think journalism is a good training for writing novels because it's, A, it's so interesting, B, it's so instant and immediate.
It's a different school, though, I suppose, isn't it?
It's totally a different school. I mean, you only write to deadline, you know, and you can't, and you only write the last minute and you write at speed.
Mm.
And then it gives you instant gratification because it's in tomorrow's paper or Sunday's paper or these days, just click and it's on screen, you know.
But I suppose it prepares you. Does it benefit you to have that training? You know, where you're having to stick to deadlines and you're having to have things done.
No, I don't actually think so because you can't. I mean, I think it's very difficult to write novels to deadlines because you're talking about a deadline of a year's time.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Now, I mean, journalism works to deadlines, but you know, I mean, people rarely write things. Most journalists do not write anything until the deadline is tomorrow morning or, you know, in 2 hours' time.
Yeah,
And that's when you do it. And you can't write 100,000 words in, you know, even giving yourself a week to do it.
Exactly.
Well, I suppose people have done it, but, not usually.
Yeah. So, I mean, would you say you're fairly disciplined?
No.
I mean, I'm getting that you're
no,
fair, you're, you
no.
seem fairly fairly laid back to me, Joe.
No, totally indisciplined. And, I mean, I've spent most of my life actually avoiding writing novels.
That's not very good when you're an author, is it? A published author?
Not when that's what you think you want to be, but, it's not. No.
And the publisher's there banging on your door saying, where's chapter two?
No, they don't. This is the other thing. I mean, probably, when you say sit down to write a novel unless somebody has commissioned you to do it, which is very unusual. I think that is very, very unusual, unless it's a memoir or something like that, or a non-fiction book, which has happened, all right. But, people don't actually commission you to write a novel out of the blue. You have to drag yourself
so did you have a did you have a publisher when you were writing Echoland? Did you already have a publisher, or was a publisher
No, I didn't. I mean, I had had a publisher back in when I wrote the first novel. I didn't have a publisher at the start, and then I did have a publisher, obviously, who published two of them. And I was in the middle of a third one when they lost interest in it, and various things happened. I was ill for a good many years, and so I was totally out of the scene again. I had to almost start all over again.
Look at you now, you're superstar.
Well,
superstar.
Not quite.
So, are you working on anything at the moment? Are you doodling around anything?
I've been working on a book set in the 17th century, which is a bit of a leap backwards.
Oh, wow.
Possibly backwards in various senses of the word, but anyway.
Oh, there's going to be some serious research involved in that one, so I hope you're prepared.
There was serious research involved in that one, yes, yeah. It was about a very eventful year in Ireland in 1691, after the Battle of the Boyne, which really set up our history ever since.
So have you got a time frame for it, when we might see this book?
I don't know. It's it involved a lot of research and a lot of sort of period research where you find yourself. Well, you know, what do they actually have for breakfast in those days? And they drank a lot of beer.
I would say they did. I didn't say they didn't have much else to do, really, did they?
There was a very, very, very violent war going on. So it was. I think possibly they were. Of course, beer in those days was actually a safer drink than water, and it was also very, very weak. So they probably weren't actually drunk all the time.
We just like to think that they were.
Possibly.
So you're a seasoned author, Joe. Anyway, so I mean, we've got a lot of listeners out there that. You know, that they're always saying, "Oh, I'd love to write a book, but I've no idea how do I even begin?" So it's a question I ask pretty much most of the authors I have coming in. What advice would you give to somebody they don't know where to start? They don't know how to make that first step.
The late great John McGahern once said to me, I interviewed him for The Guardian many, many years ago about one of his books, and. He in the course of the interview he gave me a line that actually I used as the introduction to the piece, which simply said that every story begins with one person, one place at one time. So that's I think people maybe have ideas. If they have an idea of the kind of book they want to write, or if they have an idea of the story, that's good. I mean, they have no idea of what they want to write about, and that's very intimidating, because the advantage in a way of picking historical fiction is that it gives you a period to work from, whereas if you're just simply sitting at a computer thinking, I can write about anything, anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just too much.
How do you choose
you need structures.
Everything.
You need a structure.
Yeah.
You know. So it's very difficult. I mean, I think if you really do want to write, it is a bit of a disease in a sense. You will do it.
Yeah. No, I'm always curious as to, there's obviously so many genres these days. You know, I'm always curious as to whether a genre chooses you or whether you choose your genre. Do you know what I mean? I suppose, I don't know. I like to think it's a thing that's kind of natural, that kind of just is a natural thing that happens.
Well, I think it is. I mean, I think you tend to choose the sort of genre you like to read yourself, obviously. I mean, you're not going to start writing, I'm not going to start writing a Jane Austen sort of novel because I don't like reading Jane Austen. So, that's not going to happen. So I think it both chooses you and you choose it. Because, I mean, it's a matter of your interest. I mean, you can't, I don't think you can sit down to write a book that doesn't interest you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard enough when it does interest you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's got to be interesting to you, like I said earlier. It's got. Yes. It has to keep you interested.
Yes.
For you to, do you know what I mean? For you, for this book to come out of you, so to speak.
Yeah, because it's a long haul. It's a long commitment, and it's. You know, not just probably not just writing one draft, but writing two or more. And books, because of their length, you know, you're talking probably a minimum of 80,000 words.
Yeah.
It's very unwieldy when you're having to rewrite it and so on. So it is a long commitment.
And, so yeah.
Obviously, you've got to be interested, or you've got to be driven by it in some way to actually get through it all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I say, yeah, well, it kind of fascinates me, the whole genre thing, you know, the way people seem to be, like children's authors seem to be naturally, do you know what I mean, naturally drawn towards the children's,
yeah,
children's writing.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was getting back into trying to do some writing, having been out of it for a long time, I actually did, you know, trying to look at the quote unquote lazy options. I did a course on screenwriting,
right,
on the basis that, you know, like a script, a film script probably has only about 10,000 words in it maximum, probably less actually, you know, so that's an awful lot less words, you know. And I actually wrote a play, a one-act play, which had an awful lot less words than the book as well.
Yeah.
But you know, all these genres are all different and have their own demands and requirements, and I don't think any one is easier than another. I mean, at one stage when the play was being put on, I was explaining this, why I had written the play, in a sense, to one of the actors. So he said, "Oh, so you're trying to work yourself down to a haiku now?" And possibly I am, yeah.
So that could be the next step, Joe. That could be, now you've got this fame from the Dublin One City One book, maybe we need to get that play back out on the road.
Indeed.
Would you be interested in, I suppose it would be
certainly
great,
yeah,
to revisit.
Yeah. It did quite well. It was put on several times in Dublin, in Belfast, and it's about James Joyce and Oliver St. John Gogarty, and about the opening of Ulysses. So,
yeah.
You know, I was walking by the tower in Sandycove one day and just wondering, if they came back now, what would they say to each other? So that's the play.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, get it penciled in for the next James Joyce Festival.
Indeed.
Well, hopefully we'll see you there. So thank you so much for coming to see us again, Joe. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Paula.
Thank you.
It is a pleasure to be here.
So, Joe's series of books, Echo Land, Echo Beat and Echo Wave, are all available in all good bookshops now. Go out and get yourself a copy of this fantastic book. You'll find one in the library still. Yeah, Dublin One City One Book, so check it out.